I'm here to recruit. If there are those who are here this morning that are young or old who've not yet enlisted in the Lord's cause, I hope that I can move you today to give your life to the cause for which I've dedicated mine. And I know many of you have. I want to remind you of things that most, I'm sure you already know, but I hope that I can say it in a way that stirs you up and makes you realize what I see this morning. This is wonderful to look out at this audience as I do every Lord's Day, but to see another group of the people of the Lord, my people, who are gathered here today. And I hope you realize what you've done today. So oftentimes we get up and we don't pause to think. We need to be reminded. We need to be reminded, and we are every Lord's Day around the table that we serve. But sometimes our minds are preoccupied and we're not appreciating what is happening when the Lord's people gather. Sometimes we even criticize. I confess my sin in this because it was wrong. I've talked about people, all you do is come and sit in a pew, and I didn't realize what they had done. There are those, you came here. If that's all you're going to do today, and I also expect you'll be praying with me and singing praises to God. You've come together. If that's what you're able to do, if that's what you've come to do, what a marvelous thing it is that this day you said no to the world. You got up this morning maybe with your family and all the business, so many other things you might have chosen that might have drawn you away, but you said no to that. And you said yes to Jesus Christ as your Lord. And you decided to come and gather together. As I drove down 72, I saw place after place where others also are going to gather today. The rebels are going to gather today. You read the newspaper and you read about all kinds of places where people are protesting and where people are doing all kinds of things. But I want to tell you, it doesn't compare if we understand rebel forces have gathered. All those who've rebelled against Satan, who is the God of this world, and said no to his reign of terror. And said, we will follow the Prince of Light and Life. And we are gathering together today to say to Him, you will not reign over us. And as you look around, you see those who are committed to that same purpose. And we're going to remember the one who made it possible for us to break free from His chains today. And evil will not triumph. Death will not triumph. You may just think you look around and see, well, there's Uncle so-and-so, or there's this person. No, what you see gathered here is a cell. You see an army force gathered here, ready to sharpen their spiritual weapons, to go out with love and peace and joy, and to announce to the world that there is an end to evil and death. That life is triumphant. And the one who loves us and would bless us has come in the person of His Son to set us free. And we have good news to tell. And I want to remind you of that today. The lessons that I want to preach, for no better ability, talk about them as a cause to die for this morning. A father to die for, a brother that is worth dying for. And then I hope tonight in the last lesson to then, if you haven't already made that decision, to determine this will be the one thing I do with my life. Of all the things that might be recounted, there's only one thing I do that I consider to be my purpose and cause, and that is to serve my Lord and Savior, to be His servant in whatever capacity my life may find itself, to dedicate that to Him to the best of my ability. And I've stumbled at it many times. I've fallen on my face. But the one thing I've determined is I will never, never give up on that commitment, as I am sure that He is faithful and He will not give up on His commitment to me. Brethren, in the book of Philippians in chapter 1 in verses 12 and 13, Paul said this, I want you to know, brethren, that my circumstances have turned out for the greater progress of the gospel, so that my imprisonment in the cause of Christ has become well known throughout the whole Praetorian Guard and to everyone else. I want to speak to you this morning about the cause of Jesus Christ to which Paul was committed. And to which I am committed. And I know Kenny and Beth are committed because I know them well. And I trust that most of you are committed. But I want to remind you of what that means. And I want to enlist anyone else who's here listening that you join with us in this greatest of causes, which is a cause worth dying for. And that's a reality for many people that live on our globe that we take for granted. And I'm not ashamed that I live in a country that provides freedom and provides the opportunity we have to be here today and the blessings that we enjoy. But nonetheless, all of us must have died already if we belong to Christ. And the life that we now live, we live by faith in the Son of God who loved us and gave Himself up for us. We have died and continue to die each day. That is our purpose. Not everyone sees life that way. You know, a song that has been named in Britain many years as the greatest song ever written was written by John Lennon. He didn't see the world the way I do. And the words of his song say this. He said, imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. No hell below us, above us only sky. Imagine all the people living for today. Imagine there's no countries. It isn't hard to do. Nothing to kill or die for and no religion too. Imagine all the people living life in peace. You may say I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one and I hope someday you'll join us and the world will be as one. Imagine no possessions, I wonder if you can. No need for greed or hunger, a brotherhood of man. Imagine all the people sharing all the world. You may say I'm a dreamer. I'm not the only one. I hope someday you'll join us and the world will live as one. Now that would be more powerful to me if I were not aware of the fact that John's estate was worth $100 million when he left this world. So I'm sure he could have shared that with a lot of people if that had been his choice. Well, I don't see what John sees. And there is a lot of what he says that I am in pursuit of. But I understand this. The answer to the world being won, to peace reigning, to evil being vanquished, will not come through the efforts of sinful men. It just will not. It will come to the one who has conquered sin and to those who come to know Him and to spread His life and His light into all the world. I want to suggest to you that the cause worth giving your life to is the cause of Christ. It's the cause. All the things that you think about. I have some statistics here from the earliest I could find from 2010. I'm sure they've been updated, but when I put this together, in that year, 14,700 plus people were murdered in the United States that year. What do you think something should be done about that? What are you prepared to do about that? What are you prepared to do about it? Something should be done. And sensible folks look at that and say of those who would murder, something should be done. And I'm asking you, what are you prepared to do about it? There were 84,000 forcible rapes. There were 367,000 robberies. There was one in your community just that's in your newspaper. Just happened not long ago. What are you prepared to do about that? Almost 800,000 aggravated assaults, 2 million plus burglaries, 6 million larcenies, 50,000 arsons. I see the parade of this every day because I sit in criminal court. I see it in my little community. What are you prepared to do about it? Over 22 million Americans aged 12 or older needed treatment for substance abuse and addiction. That's horrific. It's a horrific disease that is ruining our landscape. Are you prepared to do something about that? Family Safe Media says every second 28,000 people are viewing pornography over the internet. Every 39 minutes a new pornographic image is being created, and 4 million plus websites are dedicated to it, and the average age of the first exposure is 11. That's terrible. It's robbing us of our purity. And something ought to be done, don't you think? What are you prepared to do about it? The sexual victimization of children is overwhelming. Research says that 1 in 5 girls and 1 in 10 boys will be victimized before adulthood. Over 1.3 million Americans have died in war since the War of Independence. That's just 200 years. There are over 2.5 million. You announced a couple here. 2.5 million people died between 2007 and 9. There are 14 funerals going on right here in your community today. And over the next 100 years, over nearly 7 billion people will be announced just like those were announced in this audience. And your name's going to be one of them. That's evil in the world. And something ought to be done about it. And God Himself looked from heaven and determined indeed something would be done about it. And Christ came to the earth to deal with sin and all of its consequences. That's why He came. He determined that something would be done and something was done. And He's inviting us into that same cause. I want to tell you, you need to understand when you see divisions among people, think curse. That's sin and the curse of sin. And whenever you see it, it's the curse. When you see nations warring against nations, that's the curse. When you see deserts and disease, homeless and hungry people, when you see people abused and oppressed and suffering and hurting and dying, think curse. It's what the devil has brought into this world and of which we are participants. I want you to think about something. I just recently thought of this at Genesis 4. I think my next study, I want to do the first about 10 chapters of Genesis that set the stage. It's God's story. Remember, Moses wrote that to the people of Israel. Those chapters are meant to help them see and know the God that they had already met, who had uncreated Egypt and then restored again order. It's written to them. It's accurate, but the purpose for which it's written, we need to understand to explain to them who their God is and how things came to be, how they were, and what His purpose and intention was in them. But Genesis 4 is striking. Think about what God is saying to us. In Genesis 3, man sins. He's driven from the garden. The world now has become corrupted. And what the first thing God describes for us is, brother, rises up against brother and slays him. There is the... Let me just ask you, mothers, if Eve had been able to look down the stream of days to see her son rise up against her other son and take his life, would she have had any appetite for what the devil offered to her? But it started in the garden with the giving in. She was a participant in what happened with her sons. And all of us have participated, haven't we? Not only should we hate it, and I know you do hate it, but I want you to remind you of this as well. You know, sometimes we read the sin in the garden, we think, what's the big deal? She ate fruit that God said don't eat. There's more there. You're missing it. They're rebelling against the God whom they knew and walked with and turned against His trust and invited evil into their lives and listened to the devil, and the evil spread. And the world's never been the same since then. Ever. But every time you and I look at evil and we shake our heads, just remember we too promoted it. I talked to my college class I'm teaching recently, and I told them something I knew about them, and I know it's true about you. I'm certain of it. You've participated in it, haven't you? I know you've participated in sin, and not only that, you wanted to do it. There were times when you knew you were doing what was against God's will, and you chose to do it, and you would have done worse at times if you weren't afraid of the reprisals. And I know it because I've been there too. And I find that sin still finds its way in me. And I thank God for the redemption He's given from evil. I hate that in me. I hate seeing it in me. But I want you to understand, and my brother who works in the same field I do understands, I'm sure, even though it may not, criminal law has been my area. There's a theory and principle of law that I think most people understand that are reasonable. It's called the principle theory in criminal cases that basically says if you say or do something in the furtherance of a criminal act, then you're responsible for all that is involved in that criminal act. In other words, if you're the getaway driver, if you drive the car with the other fellas that go in to rob the bank, you're guilty of bank robbery. You're not just a driver, you're a bank robber. And if someone gets killed in the process of that, you're a participant in that. That's felony murder. We charge that person and say, you also are responsible because you intended for the crime to be committed, and all of its consequences fall upon you. And to whatever extent I, as a judge, have to sort out the degree of punishment or how that should be, that's a different matter. But the fact that they are responsible is right. And what I want you to understand is when you pick up the paper and you see something that just turns your stomach, when you see things happening in you and you weep in your heart because of it, you remember you furthered it. You also, when you see it in your sons and daughters, remember that you started the ripple as well. You've been involved in it. I know it's true. God speaks the truth when He says we've all sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. And we're ashamed of it, and that's a good thing. And we're grateful to be set free. But understand what we're doing. I want you to see it's no small thing. It's no small thing when we choose sin and that purpose. We can't do it, brethren. Let's pursue purity. Let's pursue honor, those things that are honorable and righteous, and hate the sin that's in us, and let's be determined to get rid of it. Because we stand for something better. We stand for life and light, and let's renounce it. Shall we continue to sin? May it never be. And where we find it, let's root it out of our lives. We must. That's our cause. We're opposed to evil and all that it stands for. The Lord offers hope in the one that He sent. As you think about God's purpose, and I want you to understand, His purpose is to do away with it. Those that are heavy laden because of the burden of sin, Jesus said, come to me and I'll give you rest. Please understand, God means you no harm. Do you not know that? He doesn't mean you any harm. You know He's on your side. He's for you. He gave His Son for you. He created you. He made you. He wants to bless you. His intention, His purpose is to destroy all that would bring curse and sorrow into your life. That's His purpose, and He will do it. When Jesus was on the earth, wherever He went, He eradicated the consequences of sin, didn't He? Their diseases He healed. He interrupted every funeral that we read about Him being a part of, whether they passed by His way or He attended on His own volition by raising from the dead that person that Satan had taken. And He's promised to give life to all who would have it. Romans 8 says, I consider the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory that's to be revealed to us. For the anxious longing of the creation waits eagerly for the revealing of the sons of God. For the creation was subjected to futility, not willingly, but because of Him who subjected it, in hope that the creation itself also will be set free from its slavery to corruption into freedom of the glory of the children of God. For we know the whole creation groans and suffers the pains of childbirth together until now. And not only this, but we ourselves, having the first fruits of the Spirit, even we ourselves groan within ourselves, waiting eagerly for our adoption as sons, the redemption of our body. 1 Corinthians 15 says, then comes the end when He hands the kingdom to God, His God and Father. When He's abolished all rule and authority and power, He must reign until He puts all enemies under His feet, and the last enemy that will be abolished is death. He's going to put an end to evil and all that it's brought into the world. That's His cause. That's His purpose. He's going to bring back peace and joy and love. And everywhere that death has left its footprint, everywhere that evil has left its footprint, He is going to wipe that away. That's His purpose. And to return blessing and fruitfulness back to us. Joy. Whatever God has in, you know, Brother D has got it right. If you miss heaven, you've missed all there is. I talk about it. It's worth talking about. But I understand that whatever it is I say about it, it's better than that. It's just better than that. And evil will be triumphed over. Don't you want to be a part of that? Don't you want to see in your own life evil vanquished forever? And all of its consequences in the world and among those you love, triumphant we will be. And I'm against those things. And my cause is His cause. Trying to gauge my time here. Look, God takes sin seriously. The Bible helps us to understand that. We want Him to, don't we? Don't you want a God that takes sin seriously? That hates the things that I've talked about that we hate and should hate? Would you want a God that looks at drug lords who make their billions on the backs and lives of millions of suffering, addicted people, and looked at that and said, well, you know, they're there. It's shrugged. Could you serve a God like that? Could you serve a God that looks at the children who are abused in the world and says to the abusers, well, it's just the way things are. You want a God who can look evil in the face, tyrants who have left behind mountains of human remains in their thirst for power, to look at those individuals and to determine that nothing should be done? May it never be. And that's not our God. He says there's going to be a reckoning. He aims to call them into account. He will call them into account. And He has done something about it. And He will do something about it. And He is doing something about it. But I want to tell you this. If He takes sin seriously, He takes my sin seriously. And He takes your sin seriously. And He says, I'm going to do something about that too. And we can either choose to stand before Him when He comes in His vengeance to deal with those who are opposed to His kingdom and righteousness and life and light and liberty, or we can stand with the enslavers and the tyrants and those who've committed their lives to evil without repentance. We can stand with them and be dealt with. Or we can stand with Him. We can stand with the overcomers. We can stand with those who looked at evil and said no. Sin will, as Romans 6 says, not be master over me. I choose the one Lord and Savior to reign in my life. I will belong to Him and to Him alone. His cause will be my cause. And what I can tell you this morning, I love you. I love that you're here. I love that this morning you said no to evil. Because you decided, I want to gather with my people, with His people, and take my stand against evil. And to celebrate life with Christ. And to encourage all those who would stand with Him to do so, to strengthen them in that. And for that, I will lay down my life willingly and give it to Him. You know, Jesus didn't just come to redeem us from sin. He came to do that, of course, to set us free from the chains of sin. But one of the chains, one of the most grievous sins that He sets us free from is the sin of living a trivial life, a meaningless life. And I want to tell you, life, for whatever triumphs and honors that men may bring to us, is of little meaning if it isn't set against evil and the evil one. If it's not dedicated to the one who gives life and who promises life and who would bring blessing to all of it, if it's not given to Him, then, you know, it's trivial. It doesn't amount to much. Generations come and go, and a few may be remembered and briefly talked about in a history class, but what more have they done? The kingdoms of men rise and then return back to dust, but there's one kingdom that will endure forever. And for those who dedicate themselves to that kingdom, you've dedicated to yourself to a cause that's not only worth dying for, it's one worth living for. And I want to stir you up and remind you that's what you're doing. Moms, when you're raising your children. Dads, when you're leading your family. Those of you who get up and go to work to earn honest wages, to share with those who have need, and to honor those who should be honored, to help in the cause of the Lord, who do that with purity in your heart and love and joy and peace, and you bear the fruit of the Spirit each day. You're determined to do that. You're determined to rise up every day, and in whatever realm or area you live, you've decided, I will be a light today. I am going to be an example today of Christ in the best way that I can. What does He look like? I don't know, but He's going to look like me in whatever role that I'm in. I'm going to allow Him to live in me. What's trivial about that? Whether you're going off to school as a student or putting on a robe to preside over a courtroom or whatever it may be that you do, whether you're going to a hospital to serve those that are needy and sick or whatever it is, but you say, I'm going to do this today in His name and live as His servant. And I'm going to say no to evil and yes to what is right. Throwing off the chains of servitude to Satan. And being free to be righteous in Christ. Ah, what a life. What a life that is. What an adventure that is. What a purpose it is. It's a purpose that I hope to convince you is one that not only is worth giving yourself to, you can choose no other. And if you know the one who calls you to that, as you come to know Him, you say, how can I do anything less than give Him my all who has given His all for me? I thank you for your time.